to me, the mission was always something, you know, you studied in school, that was something you need to have as a part of a business, you had vision, mission, values, etc. To me, it was just a little bit, you know, words when I studied it, something that I really didn't really see corporations were connected to their mission. And I thought, honestly, I thought this, felt the same when I worked at Procter & Gamble. They also had a mission, but I didn't really hear anything about it. I just heard about sales, making the quarterly sales target, etc. So, but I really understood now with Hook that it's actually the place you should go to if you lose your motivation. And I think that's something you really need to have to be able to launch a successful company.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Mother Earth Hero Show. We're still on the subject of sustainability and food. And when we think about sustainable foods that are healthy, quite often people think about fish. I mean, they're high in omega-3, healthy fatty acids, high in protein, and abundant. Well, that was kind of what I thought about before I started really looking into this. Now, from the health point of view, there are really substantial levels of things like mercury, and now microplastics are being found throughout the seafood chain, from mollusks all the way to the actual fish themselves. And then there's the abundance bit. Now, nearly 90% of all fish stocks are depleted. And I recently watched the film Seaspiracy, which I think will probably do for sushi what the Cowspiracy did for burgers. But burgers, I mean, that's one thing. We have a lot of plant-based options, and they've been appearing more and more so in the last few years in our supermarkets, and they're taking up more space there. However, one area where there is not the equivalent is definitely this idea and concept of plant-based fish. Now, this is something that our guest today, the CEO of Hooked, Tom Johannesson, started becoming aware of and set out to tackle. So in this episode, he talks about the challenges of actually doing this, trying to create a plant-based fish alternative, and how attention is shifting in that plant-based sector, and how having a mission can get you through some of the toughest times, and how that first product has been received. And of course, lots more. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Tom Johannesson from Hooked Foods.
I'm Tom, CEO and co-founder of Hooked. We are doing plant-based seafood, so we were founded a bit more than 2 years ago. We have now just launched our first product, the plant-based tuna, on the market in selected restaurants. So that was launched 1st of March in 2021, so very recently. We're very happy to finally have that out on the market, and also have a second product in the pipeline, so a plant-based salmon that goes into large-scale productions now. So we have a nice prototype that needs to be possible to produce in larger scale. So we're testing that now as well. Hopefully that will be on the market in the end of 2021 too. Right now we're 5 people, a product team and a commercial team, and we're growing. So it's a really exciting space. It's growing rapidly. We can see consumers are getting more open to try plant-based alternatives, and now especially to seafood as well, which has been lagging behind a little bit. Yeah, that's me.
But you've actually got a sort of very entrepreneurial kind of bent to you. You started off quite early as well at university, I gather. You already had a couple of startups. What did you learn through them?
That's true. When I was in university, I tried to sell neckties online, and then also backpacks online at a later stage. And I mean, the learning experience, I think the first and most fundamental learning experience is that, like, you can really start any type of company just by talking and learning from other people. Even at that time, it wasn't that common to to start some sort of a product company. Like, I remember friends asked me, like, are you installing a factory? Or are you knitting the ties yourself? And who is designing it? And who is making the website and all those things? But it was, you know, outsourcing the production, working with manufacturers that can produce the neckties and the backpacks, and then using, friends and family to get that feedback and input on the product. And essentially, you know, setting up a website just for Shopify, WordPress. It was like that. Just fundamental insight that you can really, you know, create a company that, you know, 20, 30 years ago maybe would require a lot of capital in a quite easy way. So I think that was the first insight, and just like getting the understanding that everything you see and everything you want to do, you can sort of make that happen if you just talk to people that knows and are experts in this space. So I think that was the first insight. I mean, I also learned a lot about myself. I think I tried to run these companies all by myself, which was very hard to scale, and a lot of time that you just invest into something that you don't know if you're going to get on any return on your investment, not only in money, but also in time, and not have anyone to sort of carry that stress with, or like, and also the, you know, the ambition and the vision to share that with someone is very important. So I think that was something I learned too. But then finally, maybe the biggest or most important insight for me was that it's really important that you try to solve a real problem, at least for me, because the neckties and the backpacks, they were fun. It was fun to create something of your own and some design that you thought was looked nice. And also for the I tried to create some sort of movement around it. You know, the neckties was all about original people with original designs. And then the backpacks were unisex backpacks. So created a gender brand talking about gender equality, which I still think is very important. The product itself didn't really solve a clear problem. And I think that was why really attracted me to Hooked, and why Hooked has become so successful in a short amount of time, because it's a hard problem to solve, and it's not something you set up in just you know, over the summer with a web shop, like similar to the backpacks or the neckties. It was something we had to develop for several years.
And it's quite common though, isn't it? Quite common for people to sort of have an idea and then launch it and then say, what problem are we solving here?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, important experience.
And then you were with P&G. So that's a complete opposite from a very small kind of trying to fight along your own to a startup to going to a large corp. What were the sort of, the lessons there? How did you feel working in a large corporation?
I really loved working at Procter & Gamble. It's a really cool company with large brands that have, you know, touching the lives of many people in the world. And I wanted to go there because I wanted to know how it is to work for a large corporation like that. My parents have had their own company. I worked with them and then tried to start my own stuff during university. But they always been like, you should get a job, you should get an employment. It's much better, it's much safer and nicer, and you will have a calm and steady life, sort of. So I was curious to figure out, like, is that actually something, you know, I want to do? And I was really happy at Procter & Gamble. It was a great company, great managers, great people, and career career development was also very nice. So I think I liked what I did there. I got paid for it, and I also thought it was a lot of fun. But what I was missing was the last piece, like, what kind of value am I adding to the world, which is like the last piece that I sort of needed to find that true mission and passion for myself, at least. So because I sort of realized I was working with my latest job at Procter & Gamble was sell like a commercial manager for our razor business, so Gillette and Venus in the Nordic region. And it's a big business, it's a very profitable business, but it's exciting to be part of that. But it's also, so I'm working a lot of hours, learning of course, but for the world, I'm just like keeping the razor sales steady, perhaps growing it 1%, perhaps it's declining a few percent. And I'm keeping the shareholders of Procter & Gamble happy, essentially, which is, expanding that over 20, 30 years. Is that, you know, what I want to contribute my life to just like keep this big business healthy, just watching the food tech space growing so rapidly and having that tremendous impact on the climate. It was a no-brainer to be part of that instead, and used the knowledge that I gained from Procter & Gamble to invest into the food tech space.
So when did you start thinking about fish was an issue for you? When did that sort of come about?
I am from the Stockholm archipelago, always been growing out in the I've grown up in the sea, in the archipelago, and I eat a lot of seafood in my family and in my childhood. So it's a big part of who I am. My sister actually turned vegan, so she started questioning a lot about what we ate, and we were a bit unsure in the beginning, but she was very convincing. Like, she raised all of those concerns. She has really, you know, read a lot. So we started trying, you know, plant-based diets out, and she but we didn't, you know, take away the seafood. So she tried to find alternatives for seafood, because she also ate that, you know, before she turned vegan. So she found a few examples, like some shrimps that was made out of starch, with which she tried, and they were, you know, they looked like shrimps, but then, you know, they didn't taste that good. They had no protein at all. It was essentially starch and water. So it was like the product in itself wasn't good. I wouldn't, you know, eat it, but I tried it because it was fun. But it sort of started some sort of an idea that, you know, you can create some sort of plant-based alternative to seafood. It was a little bit inspiring still because it looked like a shrimp. I was working at Procter & Gamble at that time. So I also saw, you know, all the grocery retailers and how the plant-based segment is just like accelerating, the fastest growing category. It was in all the information that we received from our customers, from P&G, that like plant-based is the future. So then I was a little bit, you know, confused. Why don't we have any plant-based seafood alternative that is better than this one that my sister tries to find? Because there's obviously a market for this type of product. So it, you know, it's just started off as some, you know, this is perhaps something that should exist. But then I started talking around to different people, and then I got introduced to Emil, who's the other co-founder of Hooked. He was then running a food waste startup. You know, they're working with bananas that would go old, creating juices and smoothies, and sold that to cafes. So I was connected to him because he was already in the food tech space as an entrepreneur. And I talked to him about this idea, and he got hooked essentially. He really liked the idea, but we started talking. So he started helping me a lot, and we started asking ourselves these fundamental questions that I know like some people ask us now today as well. But why would you need plant-based seafood alternatives? Is seafood perhaps already very sustainable? Is seafood maybe something you should eat instead of meat? Because if there's no problem we can solve here, then maybe that's why there's no plant-based seafood alternatives on the market. That's why no one has done this before. So we started reading a lot of research, and then, you know, in that moment we realized how fast the seafood consumption is growing, has grown the past decades, and estimated to increase another 30% the next 10 years, which was very concerning, because when we then looked into the supply of seafood, like how are we going to supply all of this increased consumption, both from wild harvest and fish farms, it's very fragile. So wild harvest, you have problems with overfishing. I don't know if you've seen Seaspiracy on Netflix.
I mean, to a certain extent, I'd say, unfortunately, I have seen it, because I'm going down the same sort of path. It's like everything you realize, it's, oh my God, I can't eat beef now. Definitely won't be doing this. And then suddenly it's a realization that, oh no, we can't eat fish. So, I mean, from your research, I mean, Seaspiracy was a very inspiring film. Is it, from your research, as bleak as the film makes out, that the oceans are kind of on the verge of collapse? Because that's kind of where it's pointing to.
Yeah, I think the documentary is like it's very informative, but it is a bit dark sometimes. It almost I'm a bit concerned actually that it's too dark, so people won't like been able to take it in. But what we, you know, what is true is that nearly 90% of all fish stocks is fully exploited, which means that they're on the brink. Like if we fish more or overfish or use some sort of illegal tools like these bottom trawlers, for example, then, you know, we are actually threatening species to go extinct. And the marine ecosystem, you know, if just one species go extinct, it can harm and disrupt the whole ecosystem. So we have, you know, the overfishing is a problem. So yes, I mean, and the effects that would, you know, if we, you know, kill a species or extinct a species, it's hard to predict exactly like how that will affect the whole ecosystem. But I don't think it's gonna be a good result if this ocean is slowly dying.
But it's not only just that, is it? I mean, another thing that sort of the takeaways, and certainly I know from your website you mention it, is it's not actually as healthy. That was another reason for us eating the seafood, was it's, well, at least it's healthy. Yeah. And if we're catching wild fish, it's not necessarily.
Yeah, I think also something. I'm eating a lot of fish, so I was of course questioning like why, you know, how am I going to get the omega-3s into my diet? Because that's, you know, that is a healthy fatty acid. I should, you know, that's pretty, there's a lot of evidence on that. So how much should I get that? And then finding out that fish actually gets it from algae, that is algae that are like where it comes from in the beginning. So it's, you can get the good things, because there are a lot of good things about seafood. That's no questions asked. Like it's a great protein source, very healthy fatty acids, but also lately, because of, you know, the plastics in the oceans, the pollutions of the oceans, we have higher levels of mercury, heavy metals and microplastics in the ocean, which, you know, gets into the seafood and into our body. So, I mean, it would, from our perspective, wouldn't it be great if we can create an alternative to seafood that has the good stuff with fish like omega-3 and protein, but then exclude all the bad stuff that is in our ocean? I would say it's, I wouldn't say all fish is unhealthy, but there are, you know, there are concerns that you should look into. And it's not that, you know, you shouldn't just eat seafood without questioning where it comes from, because it can contain a lot of bad stuff.
So there's yourself and Emil. You come from an engineering background, and Emil is also sort of involved in some food startups and on those bases. Mm. What sort of qualified you to come up with a solution? I mean...
Yeah, I mean, exactly. This is the thing, going back to, you know, the other businesses that I created, and the realization that you can actually do any type of, you can create a company if you just talk to other people and learn and go from there. So neither Emil and I are food scientists. So we started talking to the people and organizations that knew about how can you create this type of product. So both producers, research institutes, universities, investors, mentors, like all of these people, just bringing in the knowledge into our team and to us to understand how can we go about this in the best way, because this is a problem that we need to solve, and then we need to collaborate with the best organizations to do that. So actually, you know, one of the first things we did was to try to find a producer that is a specialist in producing plant-based products. We found one that we went, you know, we actually went there, met them in person, and we talked about our first product, which was a plant-based shrimp, because that was the first idea, because it has a large potential social impact. But we quickly realized that it's quite hard and complex to create the texture of a whole cut shrimp. After those discussions with that manufacturer, we pivoted into creating a shredded product instead. And what could be shredded, you know, shredded shrimps, maybe not. It's not another barrier we need to, for the consumer to understand, like, okay, so we usually eat the whole cut shrimp, now we need to eat shredded shrimp. That's just going to be confusing, at least now in the beginning. So what do we eat shredded? You know, canned tuna. So it's a good first product to launch, because it's very similar to the conventional tuna that you eat in cans. So and then, you know, you start working there, and then we realized we need to have more product development knowledge in our own team for the long-term success. And we brought in Peter as a co-founder, who has the food scientist background. So he was involved in the product, you know, he's like leading our product development now, essentially. So that's just how you go about it. You know, you just need to alternate and learn from where you go.
It's hard to predict. And what sort of sport do you get in the Swedish system? Is there sort of accelerators, or I suppose you talked about investors. It's like you went for, I think it's a product development cycle of about 18 months you've got there, I think, roughly, till the launch.
Yeah, absolutely. We have been part of two accelerators, actually. So one with ProVeg, actually an incubator based in Berlin, where you are, focusing entirely on plant-based proteins. So it was really a game changer to be part of that program. And then we went into Catapult Accelerator, that's based in Norway, that helped us also a lot with the fundraising as well. Yeah, exactly. Like, learn from them and collaborate with them. They introduced us to a lot of people, both in terms of investors, but also customers and production sites, flavor houses, all of these things. They helped us. And now both of them are actually investors now in Hooked. So.
And when you started thinking about the business model, this is a product that is also about education to a certain extent. It's trying to get people to understand the value of eating a different product. How did you think about that? Because I know you've said there's a statement on your website, which is, at Hooked, we are playful and have tons of fun to create a healthier marine ecosystem. That's our deepest purpose. So you're kind of purpose driven. How did you think about that within the business model?
Yeah, for us internally, the mission is everything. So we understood that throughout the 2 years, because it hasn't been like a straight line just going upwards. It's been a roller coaster. Sometimes it's been, you know, you actually question, should we continue this, because this is so hard to create, and are we qualified enough? But we always land on, like, we're doing this for something else, for something bigger than us. We need to collaborate with other people. We need to drive this forward. And even though if we go bankrupt, we don't, you know, we're not able to figure this out, we still move this question forward And someone else might pick it up and say like, hey, this is something we should work on too. And like just inspiring other people to do the same thing, I think that has a lot of value. So the mission is super important to us and also guides us in all decisions. We want to make as much absolute impact as possible. So a product that can be consumed to as many people as possible, the right price, the taste, etc. So it's really a guiding star for us. In terms of, we talked about education in the business model. I think you're really on something very important here. Not only educating people, you know, we need to educate people about the problems, because from Seaspiracy we can see that there's a lot of people not knowing about the challenges that we have with our ocean. I mean, we didn't know it in the beginning as well. We asked, is this seafood sustainable or not? It makes a lot of sense to sort of bring that information out to people. But we want to be a brand that's some, you know, you want to be a part of. So we can't be like Seaspiracy, unfortunately, because then that's going to be too much. Like, because in the end, we're going to be a product that someone's going to buy. And you know, we believe that something you buy is something you identify a lot yourself a lot with. So if you would buy something that, you know, is seen as, you know, the bad stuff with the ocean, then that's not something you really want to put on the dinner table. You want to put on a dinner table something that's tasty, that's fun, that's a positive solution and a movement forward with hope, a solution to our big problems. So that's how we're thinking about communicating, bringing the problems up, making people aware, but in a fun way that sort of packages this information so it's easy to consume.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I recently spoke to Jonah Goldman, who is starting a plant-based burger chain in America called Planet Burger. And their whole branding, their whole marketing is about talking about how healthy, how good this is. And it's inspiring. It's all about the benefits. It's not talking about the detriment of eating a real beef burger and how damaging that is. Because that's something, it's a turnoff. We need to actually present the fact that this is, I don't know, healthier than eating fish these days. It's, I suppose. So.
Exactly.
So before you got really going with this, what sort of research did you do to sort of validate whether this was a product really worth pursuing? I mean, you felt it in your hearts, but how did that go?
I mean, we had a lot of research about plant-based alternatives, but about seafood consumption, how it's been increasing. And there's a lot of information and reports out in the internet. So I think we just read up on all of that. We also had to do that because we need to have funding. So, and we are not, you know, two or three rich people that can just like start this company, product development with our own money. So we had to have grants, we had to have loans. And for those kind of things, you always need to have like a very crisp and clear business case and also why this is good for the environment. It was something we just had to do in the beginning to understand. But we also went out to restaurants, like talked to actual buyers, talked to people, you know, standing and actually serving, cooking dishes every day, if this is a good product that they would, you know, be interested in, if we could develop. So it was a lot of research, both from the market, but also just understanding the environmental issues. That was more of a report.
Were there any things that surprised you within the sort of reception to it?
Yeah, I mean, 2 years ago, I was surprised from the grants, like the one that gave out grants, but also the soft loans that they didn't really see the need for this type of product, because we were so convinced after reading all the reports, like this is something that we really need urgently. But 2 years ago, even though it might feel obvious that we need plant-based seafood alternatives now when Seaspiracy launched and like it's just moving forward every day that goes by, but 2 years ago, it was still quite skeptic. Even in Sweden, we would come quite far. I know you come quite far in Germany as well, but I was surprised that it was so hard actually to convince people about this problem in the beginning, because it's something that's so, you know, it's something that we've been told for so long that seafood is the healthier option to meat, which is true, but is it like healthy enough? Like, should we eat the, you know, we just make the connection that then we can eat as much seafood as possible, which is not the case. And then also, of course, seafood is a healthy product that has no problems with mercury or other chemicals too. So I think it's just a narrative that's been driving so hard into people's core that it was hard to change.
I think it's also, I think the scale of the ocean seems so large, and it seems infeasible that we could take away this abundance. But at the same time, it appears that the technology and the idea of fishing has changed. It's no longer the white bearded old man, you know, the hell with his little fishing boat and three guys throwing a net off the back. These are huge industrial ships with the most amazing sonar and technology on board that can sweep up everything in the ocean.
But I do want to say, like when you mentioned that, I truly believe we can come to a phase, or I hope we can come to a phase where we can go back to that, when there's actually, you know, fishing boats that are quite small, pretty perhaps local, and we can consume seafood in a healthy pace. That's the problem. Like I definitely believe seafood plays a role in our future consumption of proteins, because it's all about using our resources on this planet in an efficient way. And I believe the seafood and the ocean can be part of that, but right now we're just over consuming it, so like we are really driving the ocean to an extinction. But if we can just leave it alone for a little bit and consume more plant-based products or alternatives, we can, you know, help it become healthy again, so we can actually be, you know, consuming seafood in balance with the ocean, so it's, we're not over consuming it essentially.
Now, you talked just very briefly, you said it's been a roller coaster.
Yeah.
So what have been some of the biggest challenges you've had to overcome in this sort of this period?
I think there's a lot, but there's also a lot that feels like big problems when you're in them, but then in hindsight, just like when you solved it, it felt pretty manageable. But of course Corona was one of the big challenges. We were trying to launch in food service, but then the first wave of Corona came, and this was when we were super early, so this was in the beginning of 2020, and we just paid a lot of money to start the development of the salmon, and we also thought that, you know, we would get you know, sales from the tuna product, because we aimed to launch that quite, you know, in the summer. But yeah, as you know, it was launched just 1 month ago. So we planned that the tuna revenues would sort of fund the salmon development. But then we weren't able to launch that because the co-manufacturer that we worked with also had a lot of problems, because their customers, they don't only work with us, they work with other customers that in the food service business that I have a hard time to pay to the co-manufacturer. So they have a lot of decisions internally that said, we only want to work with customers that have a stable financial balance sheet. And then they talked to us, and we was like a very new startup with no secure balance sheet at all. They essentially said to us at one point, like, yeah, we're not sure we can work with you anymore. And then we worked with them for 1 year with tuna product. So that was really tough. But then we were able to turn that around and, say that we have funding on the way from the investors, and we just had to balance that in a very nice way. And then we were able to secure the funding and have enough liquidity to continue work with the co-manufacturer. But that was one of the toughest points, I think, because we're so dependent on actually being able to produce our product. Without it, it's quite hard. But then we were really open. We were like, okay, then if this doesn't go well, then we'll just pivot into, you know, we're gonna make the salmon a success, and then like just need to bring in more grants and investor funding into that product instead. So, but it worked out with the tuna, so that was nice. That's just an example. And then it's been a lot of stuff on the way, but that's one.
I think it was Spotify's founder who said that your company needs to go nearly bankrupt at least 3 or 4 times if you're going to be successful. So, you know, you always get to this almost disastrous moment where it's really make or break. And then if you push through, then you've got a great chance. But that's going to happen a great many times in a business. Hmm. But then that takes us on to that stage. How has funding been? Because it is a very hot subject. People mm-hmm. are very interested in it. How was that for you?
It was hard to get the first investment, I think, because you are a small startup. We're a young team as well, even though we have experience from different relevant sectors, still quite young team. And so It was hard to get the first investment, but then when we get a lot of marketing and in articles etc., we get a lot of requests from investors being keen to understand like where is our business at, and then I guess we got a good momentum with more inquiries coming in, a lot more discussions, and we're moving forward for every week quite fast, both with the salmon but also getting closer to the launch with the tuna. And it took us about 3-4 months to close the funding, and it went, we worked perhaps the 2 first months just to get the first commitment, and then it started. People started to get a little bit of a fear of missing out, I think.
And as you said, in Sweden, fish is sort of an integral part of the diet. It's perhaps more so than countries like Germany. But how has it actually been received now that you've got a product out there?
So far, we received a lot of positive feedback on the product. It makes me happy to see that people are so open-minded about this type of product, even though restaurant chains we're selling it in is a poke bowl restaurant where they mostly sell seafood. So so far it's very, very well received. They like the taste, even though some say it doesn't taste like tuna, but it's very good. It's like it's tasty. So far it's pretty nice. I mean, there's always someone commenting on social media about the sustainability of seafood and questioning that seafood is not all seafood is not bad, because we have some claims that are like, no, we are no fishy business, and get hooked on plant-based, and we don't have any overfishing or mercury in our connected to our products and those kind of things. We're not saying all seafood has that, but there's still a problem that we need to address, and that concerns some people. And we just need to take that discussion with them. But they're not that many far. Yeah. The majority is very happy with the product, which is
exciting. I think there's definitely a movement towards people understanding the impact of our diet. Mm. But there's also another movement as well, which is about people trying to eat healthier. So what are the actual your benefits of your product compared, say, to if I had 100 grams of normal salmon and I had some of your product, what would be the comparables?
So first of all, like the protein is 17% in our product. It's around the same for salmon. It's slightly higher, actually, closer to 20%. But we have high protein content in our products. And then, of course, the salmon prototype that we develop now has omega-3 levels similar to salmon as well. That's the biggest thing. We exclude we don't have any mercury, not any chemicals, not any pesticides. And we don't contribute to any overfishing or damaging our oceans in any way from fish farms or from wild harvest. So, but healthy-wise, I mean, It's mostly about the chemicals, and then we're trying to be as close to real salmon as possible in terms of omega-3 and protein.
And the omega-3, that was through algae, or how does that come about?
Yeah, exactly. So we're using algae both for the taste but also for the omega-3 nutrition.
I saw some pretty funny images of you guys running around in fish suits.
Yeah, exactly. Unconventional seafood needs unconventional marketing strategies. I guess. Yeah, what did you like?
So how's the actual marketing going? I mean, because is it today, you said mentioning about restaurants, but is this also going to be sort of on the shelves of supermarkets, or is that already the case?
I mean, we have ambitions to go into grocery channel as well. We are working on it. Nothing is locked or guaranteed yet, but we definitely want to go there. We think that, we want to make as big absolute impact as possible. We think the grocery chains is a big part of that, so people can start cooking it at home, especially now in the pandemic, that people can actually eat our product in their own dishes and be creative with it. So it's something we're going for. Launching it in food service primarily, it's great to have these cool, restaurants introducing our products in a very good way with their delicious dishes. So it's a good way to introduce the product, but we believe grocery is a big part of our future
so how,
impact.
How? What are the challenges of actually getting it onto shelves then? Is this then, there's issues with regulations or?
No issues with any regulations. It's more about just negotiating the price with the retail buyers. It's a tough position to be in, because we're being compared towards the traditional tuna product. But we are a very different company creating it in a very different way. We don't have the scale that, you know, canned tuna has. It's very hard to get there in our first year when they scaled for, you know, at least 100 years. So the pricing will be premium. And just convincing the retail buyers that it's okay that it's premium. Consumers sort of expect it now in the beginning. But we have, we have an ambition to become more price competitive as we scale, because that's also when we make a wider impact and more people can, afford to buy it. So it's definitely on our agenda, but we need to also be a business that is profitable, so we can have a long-term success. So that's I think that's the biggest barrier right now.
The price premium is going to be above that of the existing tuna at this stage.
Exactly.
When you set up a business like this, are you also looking at a social innovation model, or where you'll be taking some of the funding to do projects around, I don't know, education and things like that?
It's something we talked about, but it's hard now in the beginning, because we need to put all money into growing our business as much as possible, because that's where we make the best impact. That's where what we're best at. And we really believe in focusing on the biggest things to make the most progress. So we believe that's always going to be our core focus. But to make investments into social impacts, like the ones you're mentioning, I think that's definitely something we want to do when we can afford it, when we have enough money to do that.
No, I think at the beginning, the main thing is, in order to be sustainable, you also have to kind of be profitable. And then I guess it comes down to what you do with the profits, if you have the option with your shareholders to do such things. So I guess that designs itself. So what's the big dream then for Hooked Foods? Where would you like to be in 10 years?
The big question. No, but we believe this space is going to grow quickly. Actually, there was a study from Boston Consulting Group that came out the other week expecting it to be around, 10% to 20% market share of the traditional industry in, the next 10 years. So it's going to be growing very fast and rapidly. Right now, plant-based seafood does only have 0.06% of the total traditional seafood market. So it's super small. But the dream for us and the aim for us is to become the leaders of plant-based seafood in Europe. So really make our products available for everyone in the European region and become the leader here, essentially making an impact on how we consume seafood.
And sort of, what did you, when you started this out, when you first started, what do you know now to be untrue that you thought to be true before you started your business?
To me, the mission was always something, you studied in school, that was something you need to have as a part of a business, you had a vision, mission, values, etc. To me, it was just a little bit, words when I studied it, something that I really didn't really see corporations were connected to their mission. And I felt the same when I worked at Procter & Gamble. They also had a mission, but I didn't really hear anything about it. I just heard about sales, making the quarterly sales target, etc. So, but I really understood now with Hooked that it's actually the place you should go to if you lose your motivation. And I think that's something you really need to have to be able to launch a successful company, to have a mission and motivation that you should, provide value to other people. That's how you get through every day, because it's not going to be a lot of fun creating a startup. Even though it's exciting, there's a lot of, boring or stressful things you need to do and put yourself through. So I think the mission, just keeping that clear in your mind and feeling it's, deeply connected with the mission, is really going to motivate you to get through that. And I didn't realize it was such an important thing for me before I started Hooked.
Gee, I hear this an awful lot, that certainly seems to be, because I'm mainly talking anyway with sustainable companies, but that is a big part. They all have very, very clear missions and they're very, very driven about that. And that perhaps is what gives you the opportunity to get through the hard times, knowing that you're doing something beyond just pure profit. it's actually has some impact. But
exactly,
knowing what you know about the oceans and all that wonderful topic, how optimistic are you about the future?
I tend to be the optimistic person when it comes to our future of the planet. We had a meeting. We are part of an impact accelerator with other like impact driven startups right now. When actually one of the workshops was someone that asked, you know, can we survive on this planet? And everyone said yes, but then will we survive this planet? And I was almost alone saying yes to that question as well. I think there's I am very hopeful about the future, even though we are in a very tough position right now. And that's because I am hopeful because I'm seeing so much change. And I believe, you know, that's just going to increase. And what we're seeing right now is going to change so much of how we're eating and the food industry, but also other things. It's not, you know, all the environmental problems doesn't relate to food. 25% of greenhouse gas emissions comes from food production. So it's a big part and it's something we really need to change. And I think that's going to change the next 10 years, similar to what, you know, almost similar to what internet did in year 2000 and forward. So what I've seen from both investors, from customers, from the technology is also changing, and just the talent also being, you know, attracted to work for these type of companies. Like all of those things just points into a much better direction and an improvement from where we are today, because there are massive problems we need to solve. But if there's capital, if there's talented people working on it, and the technology is improving, and also the consumers and market are more open to these solutions, then I really think we can and will solve the problems for the future.
I love that. That's a great place to end as well. Tom, thank you so much for telling me about the story there. And I'm again, super excited about trying the product at some point and seeing where it takes off from there.
Thanks a lot, Mark. It was fun to talk.
I think it's really difficult to comprehend that our oceans could actually become dead zones. They just seem so incredibly vast. However, at the same time, I think as consumers, we've really lost touch of the actual reality of industrialized fishing. And so, I mean, ultimately, I guess if we keep on consuming, we can't expect fish stocks to recover. Well, there have been a number of companies in this series who have been looking at plant-based alternatives. So I guess there's hope, and within the next few years, perhaps the plant-based meat and fish sections of supermarkets are going to look very, very different to how they do today. Now, what I really loved about this episode, and this is something I just keep on hearing over and over again, is having a mission. So something that's much bigger than profit that can help you drive the business forward. And I think finding healthy ways to sustain the human population while saving the oceans, yeah, that's a pretty good mission to have. So I hope you've enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. I look forward to bringing you more amazing guests on the Mother Earth Hero Show. And in the meantime, don't forget to save the planet. We really do need to do it sooner rather than later.